Tom's Cabin, or Life Among the Lowly, by Harriet Beecher Stowe. Late in the afternoon of a chilly day in February, two gentlemen were sitting alone over their wine in a well-furnished dining parlor in a small town in Kentucky. There were no servants present, and the gentlemen, with chairs closely approaching, seemed to be discussing some subject with great earnestness. One of the parties was a short, thick-set man, with coarse, commonplace features, and that swaggering air of pretension which marks a low man who is trying to elbow his way upward in the world. His hands, large and coarse, were plentifully bedecked with rings, while his conversation was garnished at convenient intervals with various profane expressions. His companion, Mr. Shelby, had the appearance of a gentleman, and the arrangements of the house and the general air of the housekeeping indicated easy circumstances.
"That is the way I should arrange the matter," said Mr. Shelby. "I can't make trade that way. I positively can't, Mr. Shelby," said the other, holding up a glass of wine between his eye and the light. "Why, the fact is, Haley, Tom is an uncommon fella. He is certainly worth that sum anywhere. Steady, honest, capable. Manages my whole farm like a clock."
"You mean honest as niggers go,"
said Haley, helping himself to a glass of brandy.
"No, I mean really. Tom is a good, steady, sensible, pious fella. He got religion at a camp meeting 4 years ago, and I believe he really did get it. I've trusted him since then with everything I have. Money, house, horses, and let him come and go round the country. And I always found him true and square in everything. I am sorry to part with Tom, I must say. You ought to let him cover the whole balance of the debt. And you would, Haley, if you had any conscience."
"Well, I've got just as much conscience as any man in business can afford to keep. Just a little, you know, to swear by, as it were,"
said the trader jocularly.
"And then I'm ready to do anything in reason to oblige friends. But this here, you see, is a little too hard on a fella. A little too hard."
The trader sighed contemplatively and poured out some more brandy.
"Well then, Haley, how will you trade?"
said Mr. Shelby, after an uneasy interval of silence.
"Well, haven't you a boy or gal that you could throw in with Tom?"
"None that I could well spare. I don't like parting with any of my hands, that's a fact."
Here the door opened, and a small quadroon boy, between 4 and 5 years of age, entered the room. There was something in his appearance remarkably beautiful and engaging, and a certain comic air of assurance, blended with bashfulness, showed that he had not been unused to being petted and noticed by his master.
"Hello, Jim Crow,"
said Mr. Shelby, whistling and snapping a bunch of raisins towards him.
"Pick that up now."
The child scampered with all his little strength after the prize, while his master laughed.
"Come here, Jim Crow,"
said he. The child came up, and the master patted the curly head and checked him under the chin.
"I tell you what,"
said Haley, suddenly clapping his hand on Mr. Shelby's shoulder.
"Fling in that chap, and I'll settle the business, I will."
At this moment the door was pushed gently open, and a young quadroon woman, apparently about 25, entered the room. There needed only a glance from the child to her to identify her as its mother. Her dress was of the neatest possible fit, and set off to advantage her finely molded shape. A delicately formed hand and a trim foot and ankle were items of appearance that did not escape the quick eye of the trader, well used to run up at a glance the points of a fine female article.
"Well, Eliza,"
said her master, as she stopped and looked hesitatingly at him.
"I was looking for Harry, please, sir."
"Well, take him away, then,"
said Mr. Shelby, and hastily she withdrew, carrying the child on her arm.
"By Jupiter,"
said the trader, turning to him in admiration.
"There's an article now. You might make your fortune on that air gal in Orleans any day."